This is The Topic is Trek, episode 21 for Friday, June 1st, 2018. Harry Mudd and the Dilithium Chamber of Secrets. Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hello. I'm sorry, my feet are kind of tingly because of the transporter.
Oh, sorry. And also beaming in and almost having been beamed in from Chuck Tomasi.
99 bottles of Tranya on the wall. 99 bottles of Tranya. Let's see if the show is over before I finish this song.
Yes, it is.
All right, so I'm going to set you up.
You have got me so conditioned to hit that desk bell when you say the top, because on this show, that I almost hit it on the intro again, just out of habit. I had a twitch and went, no, not yet.
Had a twitch.
Well, I did
see the transporter was kicking in again.
Topic is Trek co-host. Where were you? But yes, Chuck, you just came back from, how did you find Europe, Chuck?
I just flew east until I ran into some more land.
There you go.
I landed on a map.
No, we had a great time. We had 3 days in London, 3 days in Paris, and 3 days in Rome. And it was good food, good fun, good family, good friends, a lot of walking. Feet were very sore from walking around everywhere, but a lot of beautiful sights, good history, wonderful tour guides. The tour director was amazing. Even the unexpected stuff was fun. So, I mean, I could probably fill up another 2 hours just talking about that trip, but I'm not going to.
I went over to the mall, so that's what I did.
Did your 10,000 steps there.
Yes, exactly.
It's not quite the same as Notre Dame, but we'll work on it.
I just walked in place.
He has a stand-up desk with a bicycle.
Yeah. I have to work to generate power for the computer.
I'm back to that routine, yeah.
All right. Well, now that we're all here, it's time to open up Subspace Chatter. I think I pressed the right buttons for it. And hopefully I did, so we can get started, because we've got a lot to cover here. The first story is everything we know about Universal Orlando's heavily rumored Star Trek area.
Heavily rumored is an understatement.
Yeah, so this story comes to us from Orlando Weekly, and I'm not going to read the entire article. Essentially, what has happened over the past couple of weeks, and this was spurred by a post over at Disney, that Universal Orlando will open a, depending on how you look at it, third or fourth. They claim Volcano Bay is their third park, so their fourth park. Universal Orlando has bought a lot more land in the area around the Orlando Convention Center, and that's clearly going to be space for further expansion. Originally, the rumor was that was going to be for Nintendo Land, which they are going to be putting into Universal Orlando.
It's not really a park. They're just going to have a bunch of open space where people walk around playing Pokemon Go.
A bunch of arcade games and stuff over on the side, you know, kind of forms the perimeter. Also, at the same time, they closed the Terminator 2 attraction. And the rumor was that maybe a Star Trek attraction was going to go into that building, but now it seems like that's going to be a Jason Bourne-themed attraction. we have no official word yet, but that appears to be because the Bourne series is a Universal property, which makes sense that they to do so. But now we're getting these rumors that you'll have several different lands in this expansion park that might open as early as 2022. And one of those areas would be a Star Trek themed land. Now, Universal hasn't officially announced this. They haven't officially announced what's going to replace Terminator 2 yet. What we're expecting is the first of these announcements to happen with whatever the next major announcement or opening that Disney does. We're in this area now where every time Universal makes an announcement, amazingly enough, Disney has one and vice versa. And they try to one-up each other. So we figure the next time that something happens, either we're going to find out about the Terminator 2 building or some announcement about this fourth gate.
Weren't they closing the Terminator 2?
Yeah, it's already closed.
Okay.
But we don't have an official word about what's going in there yet.
Terminator 3.
Yeah, exactly. Terminator Genesis, because that did so well at the box office.
Right. They got some mileage out of that Terminator 2 thing. I went in there. I was actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And it's a nice, so we're assuming that whatever takes the place might be the same type of show where you have screen and you also have live action at the same time.
Yeah. That reminds me of the Simpsons ride at Universal. And it was just like, except for the property that was in there and all the characters and stuff. It was just like the Back to the Future one. It was actually the same setup. You go in, sit in the car. It was exactly
the same. Yep.
Yeah. Except for Homer. But what? Yeah.
You weren't looking carefully enough. Homer was actually in the dinosaur costume in the Back to the Future one.
That's right.
You just had to know where to look for the seams in the neck.
There he is.
You could see that yellow color peeking through.
Well, the giveaway was when the dinosaur would go, don't.
Yes, exactly. We will keep on top of the story, and if something breaks on this, we'll get some crazy glue, put it back together again, and report on that. So right now, when you hear stories about this, remember, this is just a rumor of what's going to be happening. We've got our fingers crossed because we want Star Trek back into a theme park, but it's just a rumor at this point. Something that's a little bit further along than a rumor, though, is our next story.
Yes, we have an exclusive.
And Chuck is going to tell us about it.
Exclusive from TrekMovie.com. The Star Trek set tour planning Next Generation expansion, opening Film Academy in fall. During the William Shatner weekend at the Star Trek The Original Series set tour in Ticonderoga, New York, one of the sites we've talked about many times on this show, Trek Movie had a chance to speak with tour founder and former Star Trek Phase 2 creator and star, James Colley, who talked about the weekend's event as well as giving us some exclusive news on future plans. So this goes through and says that Colley revealed that they are currently in preliminary discussion with CBS to expand the set tour to include the USS Enterprise D sets from Star Trek Next Generation. The current plan is to take over the building next door. Sounds like there's just something wrong when they say that. Somebody got booted out. It didn't pay the rent, and they're just taking it over.
I've been to the bridge. The building next door is pretty much, you can take that. I don't think there's a lot in there at the moment. So
it's a paint store that went out of business years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. Which has doubled the square footage of the current tour and has not one, but two, count them, two floors to allow for more and larger locations for the TNG tour. The objective is to create the full footprint of the USS Enterprise sets as used on TNG. Well, that would be fascinating if you could do the same layout as they did for the backstage, which would be a little confusing to the people who still have the visual in their head of, you go in the turbo lift, you go down about 10 decks, and hey, there's 10 forward.
Well, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with the set that they have now for the Star Trek set in Ticonderoga, because you have the corridor with all the areas off of it. You have a crew quarter, you know.
Wasn't there like a broom closet or a storage thing? I mean, when we looked at the blueprints at one time, there were some obscure things on the way to other normal things.
Well, you have, I mean, it's interesting to see the layout because you have the corridor, which serves as the corridor for the entire ship. And matter of fact, there's a certain point at which you stand and you can't see the end of it because it wraps around in a circle.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so that's the view you would often have of people coming out of rooms and walking in the corridor. But when you need to get to the bridge is just this completely separate set. And this is, again, this is set up exactly like it was on the Desilu lot. It's just a standalone thing. You like walk out onto the floor of the studio to get onto the bridge from the other parts of it. There's no illusion that you're still inside the ship to get to the bridge.
You have to walk through the warehouse section.
As soon as, you know, any shot you see of the bridge where the camera's back and they're showing the bridge, you're like, oh, that's what it looks like.
They're also, the article goes on to say they're also launching a film academy at STLV last summer. The original set tour announced that they were creating the Star Trek Film Academy, where you can enroll and experience the process of creating an episode of Star Trek. Speaking to Trek Movie, Colley revealed that the academy should open in mid-October of this year. That's not too far away. He also revealed that they have lined up a number of Star Trek veterans to guide students, including makeup designer Michael Westmore, visual effects designer Doug Drexler, and designers Mike and Denise Okuda. Wow. They got some good names on here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make my own Okudagrams.
Okay. Well, okay.
Send them to all your friends. You guys know what Okudagrams are, right?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
You're seeing all the different screens and so forth on the next generation.
The whole Alcars motif. Yep. And Yep.
Yeah. Remember we saw some, our guide pointed out at the Star Trek experience in Vegas, some like little tiny airplanes and stuff like that on the, that was on the Okudagrams that were on, that bridge.
I was reminded regularly last week of our guide from the Star Trek experience because there was one young lady who strongly resembled Ms. Hebert. Every time I saw this woman, her name was Susie, and I don't know, Donna, doesn't Susie kind of look like April Hebert? She goes, yeah, she kind of does. I was having this time travel back 10 years. My time travel doesn't work very well. It goes back like 30 seconds most days.
Yeah, 30 seconds. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say. Well, now on from news that involved something about Phase 2, a different fan film franchise.
Yes, one of our favorites, I think, is the Star Trek Continues. But a Star Trek fan series headed up by Greensburg native Vic Mignogna was recently recognized with two awards. Star Trek Continues received a gold award in the online scripted web series category at the 39th annual Telly Awards. It also received a People's Telly Award for its 11th and final episode, To Boldly Go, Part 2, which was released in November. How cool is that? I'm using air quotes to quote in the article. The show said on its Facebook page, thank you to everyone who voted for us for episode 11, People's Telly. And thank you for the Telly's judges for honoring our entire series in such a wonderful way. And Star Trek Continues was done in the style of the original series, if you're not familiar with it, which aired, for only three seasons in from 66 to 69. Mignogna portrays Captain Kirk and was a writer, director, executive producer of the series, which sought to bridge the gap between the final episode of the original series and the first movie, Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was released in 1979. Episodes of Star Trek Continues are available on your viewing screen over at YouTube.
Very good. And congratulations, not only to Vic, but everyone involved with that series.
Yeah, it's well deserved.
Did you say viewing screen?
Yeah, your viewing screen. On viewer.
Magnification.
Yeah. Enhance.
Sorry.
So there's a link to this article, which also includes a link to probably their YouTube channel, I'm guessing, the YouTube link there. And I want to take this point to mention out, if you want links to all the stories that we're talking about, several more stories we won't get a chance to talk about tonight, go to the show notes for episode 21 over at thetopicistrek.com. And you'll find the links to everything there. Our next story comes to us from Inverse, and it's a story about a Netflix series. Boom. It's got to do that. Yeah. It's a nerd debate as old as time. Star Trek or Star Wars? On the day of the release of Solo, a Star Wars story, Netflix's winter binge hit The Toys That Made Us is back with season 2, including one episode focused on the history of Star Trek toys. In an interview with Inverse, creator Brian Volk-Weiss tells a harsh truth for the most fervished Trekkie collector. The only time Star Trek ever got ahead of Star Wars was when Star Wars was not making toys, Volk-Weiss said. The worst performing Star Wars toy would sell better than the best performing Star Trek toy. I say that as a fan of both. Now, the interesting thing is I watched this episode, and it goes through the long and painful history of Star Trek toys, dating all the way back to those first ones where they just took some other toy and took the other name off and slapped Star Trek on it instead.
It's the Star Trek guitar.
Yeah, pretty much. To Mego getting the license, to... changing hands to Playmates, to changing hands to Diamond Select, just all the fits and starts and the bad timing. You know, they didn't have, it seems like Star Trek never had the toys at the time that
they needed them.
And for a long history of it, the toys, when they actually got them, were not that good.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like it really just the past like 10 years or so had they kind of figured out how this whole thing works. And now they're trying to license things. And the reason I thought it was interesting that this series just premiered, or this episode just premiered on Netflix, is because right after that came the news that's in the story that now Chuck is going to talk about.
Oh, wait a minute. I was going to say something about the Mego stuff.
Oh, okay. Man. All right. Let's go ahead. Do that first.
All right. So, you know, when I watched this episode too, I saw it and I was like, oh, I totally got to watch this. Cause I had several Star Trek toys growing up, and I was heavily invested in Mego back in the day. So I had the Star Trek Command or Luke.
Wow.
Wow. Remember, the topic is Trek.
Yeah, no, nice going there, Gandalf.
Had Spock's command console, which was similar to the walkie-talkies. You had the walkie-talkies, too.
Yep.
But the one thing, and I think you and I have spoken about this before, Clinton, was the Enterprise bridge.
Yes, that which they I showed. Have.
Yeah, and it had the transporter on the side and... Yep. The different cards you could place in the front so they could see the different view screens and stuff. I love the Mego characters. I always thought it was kind of weird though. Like, there's a Klingon, there's the Starfleet officer, and yet their weapons and everything were exactly the same, but just different color.
Yes.
Like red and blue. But I loved watching him. And the one thing that really made me laugh was, before they really spoke about what toy this was, Doug Drexler was laughing because of the white helmet with the light on top. And I went, yeah, I had that too. And and totally they brought that out. And that was when they were talking about the sticker swapping, slapping or whatever that they were doing on those toys. And you could get one that said Kirk. You could get one that said Spock on the front. It's like they didn't wear anything that looked like remotely.
Not even the beekeeper outfit they wore into the Phantom Zone.
No, nothing. Okay. And it's weird because even as a kid, you knew that this stuff didn't look right, but it's like you go to the toy store, that's the only stuff that had Star Trek on it. So that's what you got because
And it was the same kind of thing about Star Wars. I was into Star Wars and then there was like nothing after the movie, right? So I'm starving for sci-fi. And I see this, it was in Pizzazz magazine made by Marvel, and it was a picture from the Battlestar Galactica era came out. I was like, okay, cool. This is, what's this? This is like a ripoff. That guy looks totally like Darth Vader. It was a Cylon, you know, without any context, it looked like the bad guy was, because there was one Cylon there shooting at Starbuck and Apollo.
Now, wait a second. Are you implying that Battlestar Galactica was a ripoff cash grab after the success of Star Wars? Is that really what you're saying? Because you'd be right if you were saying that. But
I have no frame of reference for any of this because we didn't have any budget. I had nine. I come from a family of nine, so it was barely enough money to put food on the table, let alone to go to the toy store. The closest thing we had to toys were we did puppet shows with paper bags, and they were all elderly characters because the paper bags were used and wrinkly.
Now, wait a second. Wait, I call time out here. Clearly, you already had a collectible at that point.
A paper bag?
No. You clearly had 7 of 9 in that family.
I am 6 of 9. I didn't even qualify for that. My little sister is 7 of 9.
Ah, but see, you had that in your collection. 7 of 9 was in your collection.
I'm not collecting my sister. That just sounds wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, let's don't go there.
All right. So now
I had to get the Mego talk out of my head.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people have fond memories. And it, sometimes that's in air quotes, of especially the Mego ones. I had a bunch of the Mego figures and I actually sold them. And I think I made enough money off of that to, I don't know, buy a camcorder or something like that.
You can make your own fan film.
Exactly. So we have this story about the fits and starts and all the backstage drama of creating all the Star Trek toys. And that leads directly into this story that Chuck is going to tell us about.
Yes, and I'm not even going to read you the headline because it just confuses me. This is from TrekMovie.com as of May 27th, 2018. Just 3 months ago at the New York Toy Fair, McFarlane Toys was showing off their upcoming line of Star Trek items, including giving us a hands-on demonstration of an impressive prototype for the Star Trek Discovery phaser toy. Sweet. At the time, it appeared pretty far along in development, and we were told it would arrive this fall, reasonably priced at just a mere $35, a little higher than they were in the 70s. Yeah. However, over the last week, customers who have pre-ordered the Discovery Phaser replica began receiving notices from retailer that McFarlane Toys had canceled the item, those bastards.
Da-da-dum.
You Klingon bastards, you killed my phaser. Trek Movie has not yet received any response from our inquiries to McFarlane Toys regarding these notifications. On Sunday, Trek Movie's Kayla Iacovino, I'll have another Vino as well, was at Phoenix Comic Fest. Yay, Phoenix Comic Fest wasn't there. I was in Rome. And was able to ask McFarlane Toys founder, CEO Todd McFarlane, about the company's plan for Star Trek. Hey, well, if I had been in town, I could have gone to this thing and harassed him myself.
You could have.
And specifically about the phaser cancellation notices. Kayla asked Star Trek question during the Q&A portion of McFarlane's panel, and he did not address the cancellation directly, but indicated there have been different views between the parties involved, namely CBS, McFarlane, and the retailers, when it comes to Star Trek products they should be introducing to the market, noting in part, quote, sometimes what happens is you get these weird circular conversations where the studios want you to put out something that the retailers don't want and vice versa. So you have to start doing this dance. Usually we can figure it out, but we're just trying to make sure that everybody is sort of in agreement as to what should be and what shouldn't be out there. Kayla followed up, noting we were impressed with what we saw at the toy fair and we're hoping Phaser gets made, to which McFarlane said, yeah, me too.
Direct quote. So, yeah, me too.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm putting some inflection there, which may imply bitterness. I don't know.
Exactly. Was that Todd or you saying that? Yeah, me too.
No, that was definitely me. No, the press isn't biased at all. It can be reinterpreted the same article many different ways.
So this just it comes right back again to that whole. If you go watch, you know, that episode of the Toys That Made Us about Star Trek, this is like, yep, here we go again. Because yep. I'm sure it's another case of the retailers going, hey, not everybody sees Discovery. We have kind of mixed reaction to Discovery. Can you just give us some more, you know, TOS and Next Generation stuff instead? Because that's the stuff that sells. And, you know, so you always have this back and forth, up and down coaster ride of getting these Star Trek products out.
What's the name of the franchise that's selling the replica ships right now?
Eagle Moss.
Eagle Moss. Yes, if they wanted to play cheap and dirty, which I doubt they would, they could come out with like I forget what it was, an F-4 Phantom fighter, and say, here, this is a prop from Tomorrow's Yesterday. Like, no, yeah. That's an AMT replica model that I built when I was a kid. You cheat.
Look, it's got a sticker on it. It says Star Trek right on it.
Yeah. Luke didn't fly that. Picard did.
What?
I don't know.
Where that was headed, but
sticker swapping. I don't know. Just.
It's a land speeder.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we take it even one step further. So let's go back to a simpler time, a time before a lot of these toys were even made. We're going to jump into the Wayback Machine here for Craig's next story.
Really? Yeah, so this is, well, it's more of a video than a story, but this is some of the earliest recorded footage of a Star Trek convention. And Clinton, you were probably there. I don't know. Back in 73, and there was, you can see an interview with Isaac Asimov.
Oh, those are his classic mutton chops too.
Yes, yeah. Yes. There's Leonard Nimoy on there and, DC George Fontana.
Is in there. Right. George is there. I think, mm-hmm. Jimmy and George and Leonard are at that convention. I think they show another one that, Shatner is at. I was not at the first couple of New York conventions. I think the first one I went to was in 77. They were still in the same hotel, still a case of, you know, you'd walk around a corner and there was Isaac, you know, talking with some people, and you would have your costume contest, which was just up on a rise platform, and you had probably 7 Star Trek guests there up on the stage being the judges of the costume contest. Very crowded conditions. Lots of fanzines, you know, really, really early days stuff.
Like Dragon Con.
Yeah, imagine Dragon Con compressed into one room, though, or like 3 rooms in an older New York hotel where the air conditioning didn't always work.
By the way, when they mentioned the cosplay, I was like, okay, I'm in. I gotta watch this and see what's going on. And one of the first ones is the dude with a lobster torso attached to his head. I'm like, what?
Okay. You go with what you have, you know? Yeah.
Oh, we made lobster night. Well, let's just put it.
It was a foreshadowing of the TNG Klingon forehead.
Oh, that's what it was.
See, they were ahead of their time.
Yeah. There's a guy dressed as a lady dressed as an Andorian. And yeah. Anyway, it looks like they're having a good time. Yeah. So George Takei and, looks like Jimmy Doohan's on there. Anyway, go check it out. It's only like 7 minutes long.
Right. And I think there's some footage, again, if this is the earliest, this must be from later ones. But I think if you go on YouTube, you will find some footage of other Star Trek conventions in there, but probably not as old as this one. But again, New York cons, probably no later than 78. again, around 79, with the movie coming out, things started to normalize. Get a bit more hectic. Organized in some ways. All right. So speaking of TOS, our next story comes to us from Digital Spy.
Boom.
No, they don't have one of those.
Yeah, right.
Well, maybe they do. Maybe they do. I don't know. If they want to have one, sure, they can have one. Bing bong. Star Trek Discovery boss says the show will fit into classic timeline with, quote, no loose ends, close quote.
Everybody's tying their shoes.
Yes. Sure. Star Trek Discovery will fit into the classic canon and timeline, and there will be no loose ends. Executive producer and co-runner Gretchen J. Berg confirmed as much while chatting at Vulture Fest earlier this week, where she attended alongside Sonequa Martin-Green, Michelle Yeoh, Mary Chifo, and Mary Wiseman. Speaking about the future of the show, the second season, and its canon, Berg explained, "I love the box that we are in because it can be so overwhelming when you look at the entire universe of Star Trek. But we were able to focus on somewhere on the timeline, and we know that this happens before and that this happens after," she added. "They say boundaries and restrictions can be good for us, and it was good. It gave us an opportunity to lay in some Easter eggs, and we feel very, very, very strongly about making sure that we fit into canon, making sure that there are not any loose ends that may be in the story that is being told right now, but we are going to fit into that timeline."
Very, very, very. Three varies. Right.
Three varies. So you know that it must be very very serious.
They triple dog dared us.
And as we've talked about before, and I think in the last episode, we've seen glimpses of the uniforms that the crew of the Enterprise is wearing, which are not quite the same as TOS, but very close, very, very, very close. We'll just start doing that. Very, 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 very close to that look. It's a variant on it, and I think it's an upgrade that's needed for the look of things these days. You know, just the same way that the Kelvin timeline uniforms are not exactly the same, but they are a heavy reference to TOS. So
I wasn't too concerned that they wouldn't tie everything into regular canon. I mean, I was like, how can you not? I mean, I guess you could.
Yeah.
You know, let things fall apart. But I think that if they went, you know, if they went to a third season and people are like, where is this going? Or gets closer to wrapping up and they don't dovetail into regular Trek canon, I think that'd be a huge mistake. Huge.
Okay. I saw another article that kind of distracted me for a second, but it's one we talked about last time. So I'm not going to. Not going to rehash that. It's about the trilogy.
I was distracted by the related videos on the bottom. They were showing Star Wars clips.
I thought I was just making a great point, and y'all were dumbfounded. Oh well.
No.
Squirrel. Craig, are you done talking now?
No, I heard what you said, and I agree that they better that they do than they don't.
Yeah.
Because, if you don't, you're just going to be wondering that this means nothing. This doesn't wedge in any place going on in the universe.
Yeah. It'd be a big mistake not to do that.
Now, speaking of TOS, something that didn't actually happen in TOS, but is TOS related, is our next story. And it's rather musical. Chuck.
Stardate 2018.5 Captain's Log. Lieutenant Costanza has been kidnapped by the Klingons. I am disguising myself as a mechanic and beaming down to the dastardly alien's home planet, where perils I will face are unknown. But I expect I will break into song. Okay, that's an italicized header that I couldn't pass up. That could be the latest log entry for Captain James T. Kirk, or Belmonte, the hero of Star Trek Abduction, a musical parody of the cult TV and movie series. Opera Orlando will present two productions of the sci-fi send-up, accompanied by the Orlando Philharmonic, starting May 31st. That's tomorrow as we record this, and it's only going for a few days, so don't miss out. Don't let the presenter give you a pause. You don't need to know anything about the opera to be entertained by this, says Grant Pressier, or Preiser, close enough, the company's production manager. Opera Orlando is involved because the comedic work is based on Mozart's The Abduction from the Seraglio. I hope I said that even closely. I was in Mozart, Rome for 3 days.
Get back to you.
I know nothing about Italian, except buongiorno and buonasera. So, a 1782 masterpiece about two European women who are kidnapped by the Turks. Seraglio is a place where the Turkish Sultan kept his harem. The original piece isn't an opera like you might imagine. Like today's musical comedies, the songs are interspersed among humorous spoken word scenes. I did watch a bit of this, and it is rather entertaining. It is a bit long. I mean, there's over 2 hours of video here, but I jumped around a bit. And
wait, there's 2 hours of video on here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's the video at the top. I totally missed that.
Yeah. The Gorn looks even cheesier than the real Gorn, if you can imagine that. This is pretty sad.
Like he's doing a comedy routine.
yet better than the Mego Gorn, so there you go.
The Star Trek parody was a brainchild of Josh Shaw, co-founder of the Pacific Opera Project in Los Angeles. He loved Mozart's music, but found the show dated, so he began thinking about a new way to tell it and settled on a space theme. He considered Star Wars, but found the storyline fit better as the voyage of the USS Enterprise. See, this sounds like something we would do. Take something
we should have done.
Well established. Yeah, we missed another one. You take a well-established, well-known quantity, and you do. I mean, I listen to the local radio station do this all the time. It's like, I could make a parody of that ad. I could make a Technorama promo out of that. And I kudos to this guy for coming up with this.
If only one of the three of us knew anything about opera, music, singing, we might be onto something.
Hey.
I grew up in a very musical household. Remember I said we didn't have any toys?
I have 7 of 9. I'm telling you right now.
We should mix the Barber of Seville with Bugs Bunny with Star Trek.
There you go.
Yikes.
Damn it, Jim. I'm a doctor, not a barber. Okay.
We did watch a kind of a dinner theater thing. During the off season, the opera singers from various operas do these shows. This is the off season. Well, we were in Rome for the final night, and there were two gentlemen tenors and two women sopranos, and they were doing these various songs. They started out and they came out and they did a very serious opening, and then while they were taking a break, you got one course of your meal. And then when that course was over, they'd come back and do another presentation. They did Barber of Seville, not the Bugs Bunny portion of the song. And they got a volunteer out of the audience who had no hair on his head and rather scruffy face, and put shaving cream on him while they're singing the song. And very talented people, very, very well-trained voices. And this is a way they keep their voices in check during the off season. And it was very, very well done. A lot of humor. One lady did, I can't remember the name of the song from Bizet's Carmen. And she was going around to all the different men in the audience while she was singing and, you know, tossing their hair. And she came and planted a big old kiss on my forehead. So I've got a picture of some nice red lipstick on my forehead.
Chuck?
Yes?
Chuck, the topic is Trek.
I know. I told you I could talk about this for a couple hours. Thanks for steering me back on course. We were talking about opera.
We were. Yeah, when we got into dinner theater and so forth, I figured maybe we better reel you back in.
Kisses on the forehead.
I think The Wrath of Khan is ripe for an opera. Hey, wait.
We've seen that one. Yeah, that one's been done.
Let's do Star Trek V, The Final Frontier as an opera.
Well, speaking of final...
Why does God need a starship?
Cybok. Oh. I am Cybok. Ha, ha, ha.
Wow.
I feel your pain.
It's like herding cats, people. I don't know what to tell you.
There's only two of them.
We're going to move on to our last story.
This show could be 20 minutes long.
I know. It's very sad. So, Craig, please take it away with our last story.
Yes. Yet another Star Trek thing is up for auction, and bidding on this rare version of the Star Trek Enterprise starts at 40 grand.
What? Why?
Shut up and take my money. Here you go.
Yeah. Here, just throw it at me.
Shut the front door.
So the design was created for Star Trek Planet of the Titans, a film that was
obviously
never made.
Right.
It was later used in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. So every Star Trek nerd loves their obscure trivia. And if you happen to be a Trekkie with tens of thousands of disposable income, not me, you can, I have a teenage driver. I'm out of money. You can now own a piece of that trivia. A rare redesigned version of the Starship Enterprise, NCC 1701, will go on auction in LA on Thursday, which is actually today, right? As if we're reading this, with bidding starting at 40,000. The model was designed by Ralph McQuarrie and Ken Adam, in 1976 for the ill-fated Star Trek Planet of the Titans, I was thinking of Clash of the Titans.
No.
Yeah, that's a different one. That's
Release
a different
the Klingons!
Yeah. Which was the first plan for motion picture after the original series was canceled. But after months of writing and rewriting the script, it was ultimately shelved, and the redesigned Enterprise was shelved along with it. Shortly after, Paramount began working on Star Trek, I guess they were kind of working on him. You know that whole story.
Yes.
Gene Roddenberry on what would eventually become the Star Trek, the motion picture. And there's a couple of pictures of it. It looks like almost like paper cutout.
It looks model. Very cardboardish.
Yeah. The only time this alternate version of NCC 1701 appears on Star Trek The Next Generation's epic two-part episode, The Best of Both Worlds, during a depiction of the Battle of Wolf 359. Between the Federation and the Borg, keen-eyed viewers will have noticed the redesigned Enterprise as part of the Armada destroyed in that battle.
What were they doing? They said, we need a whole bunch of ships that we can throw out there that are busted up. And what do we have on the back shelf that we can grab?
Grab that one.
Look at this thing.
Yeah.
Dust it off. We'll do it.
Yeah. And then we'll dust it off again and make it the Discovery.
So and then we'll sell it for $40,000.
It does look like a paper craft kind of thing you download and print and put together.
It does. It has all the sketching on it, which was clearly is designed to just say this part's going to go here and that part's going to go there. It's going to have detailing here. Mm-hmm.
And if you take, and to look at this, and of course I've seen these for not, I didn't remember it being called Planet of the Titans so much as, Phase Two. They had the Enterprise that looked like Discovery, which is kind of what this looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So again, if you have the $40,000 for the opening bid, probably on this piece, it can be yours as long as you have $80,000 when the pricing starts to go up.
I'll bid one bid on it just so somebody else outbids me. Just to say, I bid on it.
And then you hope somebody outbids you on it.
That's right. So tomorrow... It says 21 hours by the time we're recording this. So if you go back in time after listening to our show, you can bid on it.
Our news is topical. I didn't say it was going to be useful. It's just topical.
Timely.
Yeah, I'll say timely.
All right. So at this point, it's time to, before we come back from a subspace chatter, I want to again mention that for links to all these articles, plus several more that we did not get a chance to talk about, go to the show notes for episode 21 over at thetopicistrek.com, and you will find links to everything there. All right, now it's time to close up subspace chatter. I don't know if those are the right buttons. Yeah, I suppose those are the right buttons. Okay, it's time to head out now. On our main mission, cue generic effect.
Those weren't the right buttons, Clinton.
Here's where we take a Z-minus 10,000 meter deep dive into one subject and try to stay on course. As you can see, that is not easy, ladies and gentlemen.
Get out and push if you have to.
Yeah, that's right.
But please, put on a spacesuit next time. So this episode, we're going to dive into a topic suggested by loyal listener Diane. And Diane writes, "So I just finished the episode. I did not realize that Chuck and Craig were not your age.
Oh!
And not original Trek fans.
Whoa. I'm sorry.
I think it would be a great episode if you talked about how you came to Trek and has it always been in your life and so on.
Haven't we done this topic before?
No, but she's listened to everything, so I'm assuming no. She knows better than us at this point. Yeah. It sounds like at least one of them was not a big fan as a child and came to it later.
Hmm. Who would that be?
I don't know, because it's not.
Which show is she listening to?
Yeah.
It just wrote into the wrong podcast.
Yeah.
I think this was meant for Technorama, clearly. So I will throw that out there about how we all get into Trek. Mine is probably the least interesting because it's the simplest. I watched the very first episode when it aired, the very first time it aired on NBC back in 1966. And I watched the show for the entire run of the series at that point. Was a fan of the show that entire time. I did not find out about the conventions until around 1977, which we were talking about earlier. So in that interim, obviously there was the animated series, but I was not familiar of the wider world of Trek that was still out there. And I think a lot of other people were in the same boat as me. So the second part of my becoming a Trek fan was when I went to my first Star Trek convention, which was one of the New York cons back in 1977. And that's pretty much how I got into fandom. What about you, Craig?
Well, I would say I remember. I obviously wasn't around when it first aired, but I grew up, asking my parents, "Hey, can we watch TV during dinner and stuff?" Because Star Trek was coming on, and that's when my parents were big fans.
Is that where they came up with TV dinners?
Yes.
And those TV trays that you had on that would always tip over?
Yes. No.
With a Star Trek sticker on it. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, we slap a sticker on it.
Covered up, covering over a Star Wars sticker.
Yeah. So let me step back a little bit. So when my mom and dad, they got married very young. My dad was about to go off to Vietnam, and they got married before he went off to war. And during that time, Star Trek had come out, and they would watch some of it together. And then when he had to ship away, he missed like the last two seasons. They didn't get to see the last two. So later on, of course, when they finally started rerunning it, he was watching it. And of course, I came along a little bit after he came back. So we would always watch the reruns whenever they would come on, and I would routinely ask, "Hey, can we eat dinner in front of the TV and watch TV?" And I even recorded. I told this on our other podcast before. I taped this is before VCRs. I taped the microphone to the TV, and basically to capture all the sound, I usually masking tape all over to hold it in place, and I would record it and listen to it later. But so kind of my own rerun without the video. But yeah, I grew up with it, and as we mentioned earlier, with all the toys and all that stuff. So really my parents kind of got me into Star Trek at a young age. And then of course the movies started coming out and everything, and so on and so forth. Even though I'm a fan of Star Wars, but I'm also a fan of Star Trek. You know, there's room in my heart for all of it.
Absolutely. Do you recall the first convention you went to that had like Star Trek as a, or you like the first guest or anything that you saw? Or?
You know, I did not go to any conventions until Dragon Con, except for the podcast expos and stuff like that. I didn't go to any science fiction convention. Well, here on the East Coast, I wasn't aware of any. I mean, there was probably some. I don't know that there was any in Charlotte or anything like that. But I did work at Carowinds, which is the local theme park here. I think Cedar Point owns them. And back in the day, about the time I was working there, or it was right after that, maybe it was right after that, Paramount bought them. So we started getting Star Trek. We had the Borg ride. We had Klingons walking around and all that kind of stuff. And I remember seeing Jimmy Doohan come into town, and he made an appearance and did autographs and stuff like that, came to the theme park. It was kind of neat to see.
Cool. And there were Star Trek conventions in Atlanta. I went to a Atlanta Star Trek convention back in 1978. They were already working on the movie at that point, and the guest was William Shatner. And this kind of ties in together with the Dragon Con in a way, because the hotel was the Atlanta Hilton that the Star Trek convention was in. So, which again is a big Dragon Con hotel. It's the hotel that the podcasting track is in now, was the hotel that Star Trek convention was in.
That's pretty cool.
All right. So how about you, Chuck?
When did you find goodness, look at the time.
So your first introduction was the outro to my show. That seems like a little weird.
My goodness.
No, my first introduction was as a young child. We would often grandpa sit. My mom's dad, who was getting older and you know, a little more invalid. And while my grandmother had to go out and do errands, she would ask one of us kids to stop down and keep an eye on Grandpa Dick. Well, he usually slept in his chair. She would turn on the TV, and we were not allowed to touch it. So whatever channel you got, you got. And I don't know how, but she had more than the three channels we had over the air, because she was able to get WKBD. I was in Marquette, Michigan, and WKBD is out of Detroit. It used to be the Kaiser Broadcasting Division, which is where KBD comes from. TV 50. And I went, wait, my channel thing doesn't go up to 50. So maybe grandma was stealing cable. I'm not sure.
Well, but she must have had the UHF antenna, right?
It's not going to reach the 300 miles or so to Detroit.
No, but you had to turn the dial to make the antenna.
It could be. Yeah. But she would leave, and depending on what time of day it is, you got, you can ask any of my siblings that did the same task of watching Grandpa Dick. There were three shows that were on. It was either Bill Kennedy at the movies, in which case you were watching something that's probably on Turner Classic Movies today, only it was interspersed with Bill Kennedy, who's an old film star. He was the host of this thing, and he always sounded like he was blitzed out of his gourd during these interviews. And now back to Elizabeth Taylor. It kind of like Christopher Lloyd doing Reverend Jim on Taxi. Yeah, that's you get a picture of what Bill Kennedy was like at that point. Or Lawrence Welk. God help me, I watched way too much
wonderful,
Lawrence Welk as a kid.
Wonderful.
You know what they say about traumatic things when you're a kid? They stick with you the rest of your life. And Star Trek. So TOS was in syndication at the time, and I remember watching a fair number of them, and it was a show. I mean, I didn't have anybody there to relate to or relate with it, and so it was just sort of another thing that was going on. It wasn't until I got into high school and college that I was able to talk with other Star Trek people and go through the compendium and, wow, this is a fascinating world. And we would watch it after working late nights at the roller rink, you know, and come home and watch an episode or two. And by that point, it seemed like everybody except me knew every single quote, you know, things like
deflectors full intensity.
Yeah. I think you
just phrased out.
Regularly
you
quote
didn't
quote that.
It.
Yeah.
You didn't quote that.
Yeah, so I'm making up for it with sound bites. Okay. And that's when I found out to be a true Trekkie, you had to build your own enterprise. And that was sort of some rite of passage that you would, you know, and most people thought of it as building a model enterprise of either the TOS or, well, that was slightly before TNG came along. So I was very excited when that happened. And we had gone to the movies, you know, Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock, et cetera, et cetera. I've got all the posters in the studio around that. Craig can attest to that. He's been here. But the, we my friend Scott and I took Build Your Own Enterprise in a different direction, because that's about the time bulletin boards came along, and we wrote our own bulletin board software in Pascal. We were talking before the show, so no jokes there. There's a back reference to something that...
You did write it in Pascal. I didn't know that.
Yes, originally it was Borland Turbo Pascal 3.0, which had all kinds of technical issues. Anyway, we called the software the Starbase BBS, and then our instance of it, when you dial up into our bulletin board, it was the Enterprise BBS. So, yes, we wrote, we built our own Enterprise.
So, and is that the bulletin board that on your dog days you were reading the entries from?
Yes, it was. Yep. Very astute of you. Yep.
To call back to some other show.
Don't call him names.
Right. All right. And what was the, do you recall the first convention that you went to that had like a Star Trek?
Yeah, I'm with Craig. I was way up in the frozen wastelands of Michigan, so there weren't any real conventions that came near us, unless you wanted to take an eight-hour trip to Chicago. But the first one that I went to was also Dragon Con 2009, where I illicitly got into the Shatner Nimoy panel.
We did. Yeah, or you did. We were there. I saved you a seat.
See, there was a line around the block. And I had to pick up my ticket, and I didn't realize the ticket line was also around the block. And if you remember the ticket pickup from Dragon Con a few years ago, it was slow and painful and arduous and took 4 hours. So Craig and I were on the phone regularly, go, where are you? Halfway around. Dude, the show's going to start in an hour. Okay, I'm almost in the door. Oh, God, they got the cattle corrals. I got to go in another hour inside the... So The panel was just about to start. I hightailed it up to the Marriott and get in there. And there's a line still going into the Shatner Nimoy panel, into the Grand Ballroom. And I was just about to get up to the line. And this gentleman says, sir, you're going to have to go out and go around that way. So I'm thinking, think quick, stupid. What are you going to do? There's a men's room over there. May I use the men's room, which cuts directly through the line, right? And I'm still on the phone with Craig. Yeah. So I go into the men's room, and I hear Craig on the phone. Well, come on. I said, well, I can't just walk in and walk out. They'll know something's up. So I'm standing in the men's room for an appropriate amount of time. You know, going, how long is an appropriate amount of time when you're not doing anything?
Right.
As you go, that creepy aspect. Yes.
Right. Okay. This ought to do it. So I come out of the men's room and I walk right into the moving line as it goes past the men's room. And I swear about 10 feet behind me, I heard this voice. I don't know. I saw him go in there. But I kept walking. And when I got in there, Craig is saving a seat, which you cannot do in these things. You can't save a seat. They compress you. They defrag all the empty space out of
defrag
the
it. Yeah.
And yet there was an empty seat. And I sat next to Tabs and, you know, some of our other friends that we know from the podcasting world. It was a wonderful panel. And I thought I was going to lose my rights to go to Dragon Con forever on the very first event I went to. But no. I got away with it that
time. And that was worth it. That was a fun event.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And one that can't be repeated, sadly, anymore.
Ever again. Right. So had I not gone to that panel, I wouldn't have a good memory, and I wouldn't have, there wouldn't be another chance to do that.
So, Diane, I hope that answers your question.
Hope someone was entertained by all that nonsense.
Yeah.
If not, let us know, and we'll try again. But I also want to mention that if anyone else who's listening has an idea for a main mission topic, you know, let us know. You can get in touch with us on our Twitter page. Twitter at the topic is Trek. But probably the easiest way is go to the Facebook page and leave us a message there.
We did have another question for our listener audience, if they wanted to respond. We were talking before the show. What is the cheesiest effect you've ever seen on Star Trek? Or the cheesiest prop? I think it was, we were talking about the props.
Right. Because I had a specific one I talked about, and but I'm not going to mention what it is because I want to see if somebody else mentions the same thing.
Yeah. Bring it up on the next show.
Okay. I was going to play the sound effect, but I will defer from that.
Okay. All right. So let's return from our main mission.
Where were we?
Yeah.
We're only up to episode 21, people. We'll get this down sooner or later. Don't worry about it.
Well-oiled machine.
World Kern.
That's a transporter, not Warp Speed's round table sound effect.
Oh, wait, he said we were done. I'm dematerializing. Good grief.
Get us back.
I love these 300 baud transporters.
Yeah. Starfleet, boost your navigating. Okay, anyway.
Turn on the watch. Go ahead.
Warp Speed roundtable time. And this time around, it's going to be related to the very first thing we talked about. I know it's hard to remember. Way back in the beginning of this episode, we talked about the possibility, the rumor, that there's going to be a, if you will, Star Trek land at Universal Studios.
Suddenly images of Duloc come to, welcome to Duloc, such a perfect place.
That's again, we can't sing, we can't play instruments, we don't know opera, so.
We do a podcast.
That's right.
Welcome to my ship. I'm sorry, I was going to do this, Barbara Seville, never mind.
Just doesn't work.
No. Yeah, he's going to work on that all week, you know.
I know. You wait. So
here's my question. If there were to be a Star Trek land, what one thing would you most like to see there? Now, I'm going to start off, because I was thinking about this, and I thought of something that, would it be the thing I'd most like to see? I don't know, but it's a thing that I think could actually happen and I'd like to see. So I'm going to take that route with it. I was thinking about, well, you've got rides, but you also have to have restaurants. And the restaurants, what would you want to have? Well, how about replicators? And I said, I don't really want to have a situation where I'm paying a lot of money to go to a theme park and have all the food pre-made so I can do the replicator thing, because everything, you know, just slides out when you ask for it because it's already packaged.
And you see a hand.
So, So I don't want that. But what I was thinking is that you could, with technology that we have now, either using old special effects like the Pepper's Ghost effect you see in the Haunted Mansion, or with some of the see-through panels they have now on various machines and displays, you could have the replicator set up for your beverages. So you could say, my wife Bonnie took this one step further, saying, all right, what you would do is you would tell the person who's taking your order what beverage you would like, and they hand you one of those square colorful chips, and you take that, you know, the memory cards from TOS, you take it over to the replicator, you put it in, it's been encoded with, say, RFID. It knows what the drink is that you want. And then you see a screen where the drink materializes, and then you can go in and just grab the drink and pull it out.
I just started thinking, you put the thing in, the chip in, and then a little paper cup falls down and it fills up the cup like the old vending machine.
That's
high tech.
So sort of in theory, that's kind of what's going on in the background, but you don't see that.
Right.
You see what looks like it's materializing. So I thought, you know, I'd like to have some themed restaurant, but how do you make that Star Trek without a replicator? And I'm thinking, I think you could do a replicator for at least part of what you're having for your meal. So that's what I would be interested in seeing. How about you, Chuck? What would you like to see in a Star Trek land?
Oh, so many things. I mean, a holodeck would be nice, but I don't think we're there with the technology yet. But, you know, with visual effects, like you said, maybe. I was thinking more old school, let's have some fun with this, like, the arena, combat the Gorn field of battle. That wouldn't be much of a ride, though, so much as getting the
right
blankety blank kicked out of you.
Rock, cardboard rocks thrown at you.
Right. You construct a cannon made of diamond, sulfur, saltpeter.
Although,
such fun for the whole family.
The person take the handful of diamonds home with them. Hey, it's a win for everybody.
As far as rides, you know, there's always the, you could repurpose the shuttlecraft ride from the Star Trek experience. I'm sure they're still collecting dust somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that, well, one of the advantages of that is you've got that on film. I forget, you have the voices of the actors playing in the shuttle and you have the screen in on the bridge that actually has some actors, right? Because you want to have something from that time period. If you're going to do that, that would allow you to quote unquote go back in time to film those actors the way they appear during.
Certainly, you know, wouldn't want to film them today.
Well, it would just take you. It would take you out of it. But this would be a way to actually to do that. I thought. Oh, so I wanted to mention that when you talking about the Gorn, I was mentioning about the diamonds. One of the things that Bonnie said about using the computer, you know, memory disk, the chip. She says, well, a lot of people will just order the cheapest drink and keep the disk as a souvenir. And I'm saying, exactly. It will cost the theme park about 5 cents to make it, and they'll charge $2 for the smallest drink. So yep. Who's laughing now?
It's just an RFID tag. They put a sticker over a hotel room key.
All right, how about you, Craig? What would you like to see in Star Trek land?
Well, I remember, I think Chuck and I mentioned, talked about this on our other show a long time ago. There was a plan. There were plans for a Star Trek casino, which was supposed to have a full, it said full-size Enterprise built out.
Yes.
I would like to see something like that, which was, I think, in one of the pictures of the article, one of the articles about Star Trek land, I saw that picture and went, yeah, I want to stand outside and see how big it actually, you know, they make an Enterprise, you know, a full size Enterprise out in the open. I think that'd be pretty cool.
They, that article, at least one of the articles, and I'm not sure if it's one that's in our show notes, but they show also for scale, they show what the size of the full-size Enterprise would be compared to the Empire State Building. And it's almost as tall.
Yeah. That's so it. The picture at the bottom, from the Goddard, it says from the Goddard group. That's the picture I was talking about where, it looks like, yeah, the Enterprise is sitting there with a bunch of lights and there's a little walkway to get up on the ship. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So what about the idea of, say it was, you know, 3/4 scale or half scale and had stuff, you know.
And then you'd have that problem that had on the toys
bumping where
they
get heads.
Bumping their
heads. Well, but I mean, you go into it and even at that size, it's still big enough inside that you could have a ride
levels and
other
stuff
inside of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, I get it. But you may have to do that because I think it would be incredibly huge. But that's the kind of thing I'd like to see, is I'd like to be able to walk on it and, you know, walk through it and walk up on the bridge and stuff like that. You know, obviously you're going to have themed restaurants and stuff like, you know, to go along with it. But
you have to have something for the whole family. So while mom and dad drop the kids off at the Tholian Web, just stick your kids up there for a few hours.
No. The thing is, you drop your kids off at the Tholian Web, right? But they tell you when you drop off your kid, you have to come back and get them before the web is finished.
Yeah.
No. While you go and enjoy a nice relaxing drink on Risa.
Yeah, right.
Oh, my.
Well, I also thought, just like Chuck did, I thought the holodeck. So you would go to Star Trek land to go on a holodeck to go on Star Trek land.
My head hurts all of a sudden.
He just pulled an Inception.
That's right.
We saw that bridge.
Which bridge?
The bridge that was in Inception.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's actually a real place.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Anyway.
All right, so those are our ideas.
I like the Tin Man.
of what we'd like to see in the Star Trek land. How about you? If you have some ideas of what you would like to see in Star Trek land, and again, I have to emphasize, this is just a rumor at this point, please let us know leave us a message over on our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek. But now it's time to end the show.
Oh. Yeah, and don't forget, I was trying to type it out here so you'd see it, but okay. Don't forget, if you have one of your favorite cheesiest props that you remember from Star Trek, let us know, because we will reveal ours next week, or next time.
Indeed. We will indeed. All right, so you can always find me at Comedy Forecast, and you can find me under that same handle on Twitter and on Facebook. And you guys are still at the Technorama podcast, obviously.
Yes.
Anything else you want to be mentioning at this point?
Podcastingfordummies.com.
Okay. Alrighty. Mm. And that book is out.
That book is out if you're interested in starting a podcast or finding out how the sausage is actually made on one of these crazy things. Don't follow this example.
Yeah, I was going to say, whatever you hear here, the opposite of that is what you want to do.
You know what the crazy part is? I actually do a lot of the same stuff and get paid for it during my day job.
Somebody's paying you for this?
I took my hobby to work and get paid for it. How great is that?
Yep. Actually, we both did a little bit today.
Yep.
In prep.
Yeah. And how well did that go?
Hey, just like our regular podcasting career.
Prime example.
Just as well.
This is why I do the show notes for the show, ladies and gentlemen. But anyway, so it's time to hit the theme. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek. Visit our Facebook page or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Chuck, Craig, and myself,
don't I'm put Clinton. On the. Too soon?
Too soon. Thanking you. Oh, my goodness. Thanking you for listening. And as we always say here on The Topic is Trek, now.
Don't put on the red shirt.
2 weeks and they forget again.
Or the gold ones, and you gotta make decisions.